Expect the unexpected. Talang CEO Thorsten Loye talks to Wolfgang Jennewein, professor of business administration and leadership at St. Gallen University. He focuses on leadership of high-performance teams. Their topic today, leadership.
New leadership, that's our topic today. When did the two of you did not act as prototypical new leaders? Do you want to start recently?
Recently, I mean, that's not an easy question. I'm sure several occasions, but one I remember right now is when I was at home with my three kids. It was super loud and noisy, and I'm stressed out. And then I yelled at one of my sons, and I tried to, let's say, overcome his anxieties with my being more loud than he are, and that was not appropriate. And I felt sorry about it. But then I apologized. And that happens a lot when we are stressed out. We don't act like we should. So that's what I've learned, that I try to calm down and empty myself before I get in a meeting.
Thorsten, how about you? Did the command and control Thorsten comes out once in a while?
Or? Well, I would rather say what I get to my mind is now active listening. So sometimes, and I would say it's nearly every week, there's a moment where I say I was talking too much, too long. And there were meetings where I'm still believe I'm short, at least that's the perception people have about me. But sometimes I'm still too long and not listening enough.
I was throwing in the term new leadership right away. Let's define it. What is new leadership according to academia, according to the concepts you were teaching at St. Gallen?
I hesitate a bit to say it's new leadership. I would say it's leadership fitting to the environment and the context we are all acting at the moment. And it's always dangerous if you say it's new and it's old, because then you say the past is bad and the people who act to that days are doing the things wrong. It's not correct. I say it's a development, and it's a development because the context is changing, and the context is very, very volatile, VUCA. You all know that. Complex and unpredictable, uncertain, and in such an environment you need people who co-think, and not running the machine. It's not about reprocessing, it's about reinventing ourselves, and therefore we need empowerment, we need co-thinking, we need flat hierarchies and an environment where people feel at home, because they are in their best mood and in the best motivation to change things for the better.
And I remember in the past, we always talked about, I don't know, 20 different leadership styles, at the end, cooperative, authoritative, and so on, right? And there was once called situative leadership style. I think today is much more this a question. And sometimes you need to put a different approach here and there, more listening, less listening, and so on. And I think, therefore, I agree with that one, that we really have to take the situation, especially in the VUCA world,
right.
It's needed,
right?
Because it's changing so much,
right.
Much more than the past,
right? And everything, you know, you have to rethink again, and especially in a changing environment. And what I would be careful is with the situational approach is that you say, okay, whatever happens, I adapt. What people look for is a dominant logic. What is your dominant philosophy in leadership? Mm-hmm. And then on the situation, you can use also directive elements or authoritarian elements. That's also okay. But the dominant logic should be an empowering in this world, because the empowering leads people to think twice and to give the best of them.
Okay, but when you know when you can pull out the so-called old management style tools and when you have to be on default on the so-called new ones, how do you decide in that special moment then?
Well, again, the idea about old and new, we should just don't use these words, I think. It's just a situation that counts,
okay.
I guess, right? And for sure, if you have some meeting that's called an accounting controlling, for sure you talk about numbers. And this is about really data fact, let's say. No? But what I think is the main idea, how to, and people like to have to be empowered. But the question is how to get them empowered, you know, how to make sure that they love it, that they take it, and that they deliver it. You know, they to create an environment of trust where it's possible to empower people. Mm. And we should not talk about old and new.
Okay, I accept that now. So we call it good and bad management. So what does good, let's call it contemporary management that fits the time. Mm-hmm. Would you agree on that? Can we go that
way? Yeah, back? We can go that way.
So what are the mindsets and skill sets that you need for contemporary good management today?
You need, first of all, to have a genuine interest in people. You need to like people in 2022 going forward. Because if you don't like people, you don't get a connection to them. If you don't connect with them, you don't get the heart of them. If you don't get the heart of them, you don't get the intrinsic motivation. So that's the first step. And then you help people to get better in things that matter to the people and are in line with your corporate goals. This is my main take from modern leadership.
Easily said, hard to do, I assume.
I would just add on this, trust. And trust is a sum of experience. So you have to be very authentic what you're doing. And so there should be main theme that people really see that each experience they do, and there should be not one, you know, exemption from that, that they really follow you with a trust. Mm. And that environment energy is creating. And at the end, we are here for creating energy in the company to go the last mile at the end, right? And this you only can do with trust. This was a private relationship, mm-hmm, you know? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You have to trust your partner. And then he has to deliver somehow. But first is a trust. Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting term. I mean, we all know that to build trust takes a long time and you can lose it within a second.
Absolutely.
How do you build trust in the long run?
Yeah, what we know is it takes a while till you build it up, but you can destroy it in 1 minute.
Exactly. One example.
One example, one wrong word, one wrong reaction, and then you have to build it from scratch. But what we know is that trust is heavily built on vulnerability, on intimacy. If you share your anxieties with your people in the right moment, not always, but if you share your anxieties and you're transparent about your emotions, that creates a closeness and a feeling of trust. And if you reduce your ego, because people, you know, they sometimes share their things, but then very often they have a huge ego and that destroys the trust because they say they do it or he or she does it just for himself.
For me, the key overlasting element, if you see, we do not use old and new style or good and bad maybe, but humbleness is a theme over generation which makes people very powerful. Mm-hmm. We are all here to deliver for the company. And if we are not there, someone else will do it. Humbleness. And no narcissism or egoism or whatever, just destroys energy in the company.
That's interesting. Aren't many, many management and top management careers not built on the opposite of humbleness? That are very confident of themselves?
I would say they're all examples. And this is all the other way. But I know many leaders who really follow this and they get followership at the end of the day, and long-lasting fellowship. It's not about the question to get a short-term fellowship, but how you really last when you leave the company. Mm. You should bring a culture, and culture needs a lot of time. And culture should survive even if you're not there, because it's a culture element which will survive. And it's a question how long-term you will have impact in the company. Mm.
And I like that you connected humility with trust, because humility for me is not taking yourself too serious.
Exactly.
And you can laugh about yourself.
Yes.
You can accept that someone is making a joke when you're around as a
yes.
CEO, right?
Yes.
And then that creates closeness, and that creates this feeling of trust. And there's a wonderful saying: humility is not thinking less of yourself; it's thinking less of yourself. that means you don't pretend to be little and weak. You think you have a good confidence, but your first thought is not always yourself. It's about the we, not so much about the I.
At the end, stupid saying, we are people business and we are all human beings, you know.
Right.
That's a very simple saying.
Besides trust, I know curiosity plays an important role in both of your thinking. Why curiosity?
I love curiosity because, you know, when we were young, 5-6 years old, this was the moment where we start to explore the world and where we could cope with changes in our childhood, right? And kids never judge. It's, if it's raining, it's raining. They don't say it's a bad weather, I have to move to Mallorca or somewhere. No, they stay because kids say, you know, it's different. It's not good, it's not bad, it's different. And this is something we as adults tend to lose. The longer we stay in an organization and the older we get, we tend to lose that curiosity that we had when we were child.
Because you have so much experience.
Exactly.
In the past, yeah.
And then you judge.
And what was interesting, when I went to China, I recently had a meeting there, and there was a person who presented us his digitalization, right? And he was 40 years old. And then he said, well, sorry, guys, I will not continue presentation because I'm too old for this. And we are all over 50s, right? And then he brought some young people who showed really how things are running. And we were just not really closing our mouths. It was really, for me, a moment to say, wow, he's so right. how I can talk about blockchain or about bitcoins, about or to new data, whatever, KI. Yes, I try hard, but young people are just digital nerds. They know that, yeah, from the they're born in. And therefore, how to give empowerment, this was the other theme we had, to those people to find a framework that you give the frame, but let them run in between. Because the higher you come in this, the less you know.
Mm-hmm. And what may I ask you, how was the, let's say, perception of this 40-year-old guy from within the group? Didn't they feel then, hey, he's not competent enough to talk about it? Did you?
For us, he was very competent.
Yeah.
You know, if you go to China, to these leading companies in our industry, I feel really, because what they do is data is different, different world, because different environment, we have to say fairly. But it was really very, very impressive.
Really?
Very impressive. Very much data-driven mindset.
See, and that's what I think. It, you know, we should not question the reputation and the competence of a person if he says, "Hey, I'm not the best person to talk about it. One of my colleagues, who is much younger, can talk better about it." But very often we challenge then the competence of this person, and that's stupid. Yeah.
Yes.
What you're describing definitely, very obviously, in the networker world, this growing international competition needs change within old and large organizations. People don't like change. At least often they don't like change.
Are you sure?
Many don't.
Yeah, I think that's a myth. I think that's a myth. Because, you know, our whole life is change. It's everything is change. You have a new iPhone. You go on Instagram. You go out of Instagram. You move to another city. You move to another country. You get to a new, you take over a new job. Everything is change. You have a new partner. Everything is change, isn't it? We are afraid, and that's what we're right. We are afraid about the unpleasant changes in our life. But we should get away of this perception of, hey, change is bad. No, and we want to change. We want to develop ourselves, right? Nobody wants to live the same life every day.
Are you sure there? Aren't you describing now a prototype of person that possibly you find quite likely in academia, but possibly not in large organizations?
I would say this would be nice if it would be like this. In practice, I see a bit different. I see people are afraid a bit of losing something. If you don't have the right story, the right trust in the company, they say changes will be always worse for me. You know, different location, different job. So I feel it a lot in the mass. So therefore, you only can overcome these kind of changes how you treat these changes. And again, we see changes are needed, first message, and trust them, okay, go for better. Whatever better means, you know. But to stand still is for sure a bad choice in the society. And this should people accept. This is not so easy always in reality. Yeah? And it depends on society. When you go to mature markets or get emerging markets, they have continuously changes. When we talk about inflation 10% here in Germany, people get afraid. I go to Turkey, they have 150%. There you have to adapt a bit faster everything in your life. Right? So that depends, I would say. Mm-hmm. But you should be very in the change or transformation process, always very sure that these afraid feelings are always there. And you should tackle that one.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I don't say that everybody loves change. I just say it's questionable when we always say, "Hey, change is bad," and it frightens people, because then we have this stereotype in our organization that does not help.
Absolutely not. Yes.
What I would also recommend is that people are afraid of the transition. Mm-hmm. They say, "Okay, we are here, and they want us to be there. And how do I get from here to there?" Let's take the automotive example. You know, you for 20 years in your life, you produce combustion engineers, right? Engines, and then you should do electric.
Yes.
And then the people say, yeah, I'm not against electric, but how do I get there? And what is my role in there? So focus on the transition. And here the curiosity can help again. So ask questions and activate the people with co-thinking. And then I think you have a good chance to digest the change. What we know from change research is that you should shrink the change. And not talk about the huge change, shrink the change and do small steps.
Exactly, because the bigger it gets, the more complex it gets. And in change management process, you need people who have an easy mindset, because a complex mindset, you never find easy solutions.
Right.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. And how does, I know, not new leadership, but contemporary leadership comes into play here. What skills do leaders today need in order to entice this change and make good change management?
Well, empowerment, active listening, curiosity, trust. And so, I would say values behind all this, and this creates a trust at the end, is of transparency, collaboration, engagement.
Okay, those are the three terms that the management learning journey the two of you have designed are based on. How do you make sure that these generic terms really help people in order to change the things that need to be changed?
I mean, it is not about the concrete term, but it is about how much you really live up to it.
Okay.
And I have the feeling that these terms are embedded in the DNA, in the identity of Talangs. That's why people say, yeah, I can live with it. Collaboration, engagement, transparency. I understand that that fits to us, that fits to our business. And then it's about how much you live up to it and how serious the board and all the people within are about that values. Talk about it, live up to it, yeah? Challenge each other, give feedback to each other. And that really makes the difference. It's not about if it's the right or the wrong term. It's about fits. Does it fit to your identity? And then do you really work on it and live up to it?
I agree. And the challenge here is, again, this three values, however you count this, is like trust. What is trust as well? A very generic term. But the answer is creates energy to move on in the company. And the challenge here is to get a systematic anchoring in place, you know, because it's in a transformation or in a cultural transformation project. The first step, always logic, you start with a certain layer of people, but how really in each corner of the company these behaviors are lived upon. And there you should make sure that it's always by example. So trust is a sum of experiences. And if you always talk about these values and you still have leaders who don't live up to that, only one leader destroys what we really, at the end, in the long term, if you leave it there, the people say, well, he's just talking. But see these guys, I mean, they're still there and surviving, make a career even, yeah. So it's very sensitive to be really strict on execution on that one, mm-hmm. because it's not a soft one. It's a hard one because it's like with a private life. You don't want to have a partner who you cannot trust, who's not transparency, who's not engaged with you even really, who doesn't collaborate with you. You don't want to have such a partner in private life. It's the same as business life.
Mm-hmm. And then at home, you probably challenge your partner. Yes. And you say, hey, we agreed.
Or you leave.
Exactly. And that's the moment where it becomes magic, when people really challenge each other, or they leave if they say, I don't fit to that value. That's just fair, right? There's not a bad person if he or she leaves. I think it's consequent. But if you don't have an identity, everything and nothing is accepted. And that's the problem in cultures very often.
And how do you make sure that this culture is indeed then lived or felt in daily corporate life, rather than it is, as we know in many companies, something that is on a sheet or a flip chart and not indeed felt in practice?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, first of all, it's a process. So don't expect miracles, I don't know, in 6 months. It's a huge company, so you need years to really get deep integrated in the organization. But if you stick to it, and as you said, if you also challenge people and evaluate people against that behavior, not only against the results, but also against the behavior, then you have a great chance that over years it really will be a differentiator. Hiring the right people is a key aspect. But what is more important is that you have then within the organization an environment where people are developed and also challenged around the identity that is important in that organization. Because what we see is when people are then in the organization and there is an environment where really also behavior is discussed, then they develop.
And that's a key question. And totally right here. But the question is how much you can develop people. A lifelong learning procedure, yeah, and this we should absolutely do, because it's not about hiring other people from the market. You have to work with your people here in the company and develop them. This is a challenge, and you will have to be very close to the people, because to change behavior, it's not from one, as you said, in their culture, it's not from one to the other day. It takes really time.
Exactly.
And people have to be convinced it makes sense for themselves and for the company.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And here's a critical point, and therefore we did a journey together. It takes time. It's not a 1-2 months question. Absolutely.
No.
You have to take this very seriously. Or existing people change. And what was beauty for me is, I've once recently talked to one manager who is 45 years in our company. Yeah? And he said, and he's really, let's say, in a different style of leadership. He grew up. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, this is so beautiful experience to me. Unfortunately, 10 years too late for me.
Really?
Yeah. And I never expected from this person.
Nice.
And this is really something where I see, wow, it's still possible after 45 years working in a company to change.
Oh, Nice story.
He stayed curious, I assume.
Yeah.
Let me gear to a subject that is also important and that is very much connected to what both of you were saying, is how do you implement a culture in a world with very much of remote work? So many of the things that you were describing, working on the culture, seems to be easy in a world where everyone is working at the same place and not only connected through Zoom or Microsoft.
I mean, this is really a very interesting question. And I think we all work on this a bit, what is the right way? I think the key question is to understand which kind of work you can do better here or better there. I strongly believe if you talk about bonding, about creating a social kit, you need physical contact. Ask yourself, what is the best way? And in this kind of discussion, what is the best way for the company? Not just for me, for the company. Which kind of job? Innovative procedure, processes, new hires, recognition to people on the stage, kind of things which human being needs. So therefore, it should be always hybrid. It will be always stay hybrid. I think this is a new work, let's say, which will not change. But we should not make it easy as well to say, well, what is more comfortable, more efficient, because effectiveness counts as well to bring the company ahead. So I would say it depends. It's more challenging for managers, more active listening, more feeding. So coach in the soccer field, he has to feel who's sweating, who has psychological issues now. He cannot do it at home with a video screen. He could stay home as well, but he cannot really have the real feeling about the match going on. So a coach, if whatever, a big coach would say, I stay from now always home because it's much more effective, and this team speech I make by video conference, it will never work. And this is and we are, well, the community of social beings, human beings, and therefore it's very important to be present, especially as a leader, and sometimes not always, but, you know, make sure in which situation you have to be present, which not. So it's a hybrid, very complex situation here, but very nice if it works in a way where you organize it well.
What we see in our research is that the rule of thumb is like that. The more interactive you are, the more physical interaction in the office you should have. So, for example, our R&D team, an R&D team or a design team, which need to be creative, you need interactions and you need physical time because you can feel, you can listen, you can smell the person, you can yell, you can shout, and this creates this creativity, which you cannot alone in your house, in the
coffee machine, the innovation.
But the less interaction you need, like call center employees or let's say accountants, for example, which probably have less interaction. There you can have more remote work, more home office work.
But more means never 100%.
Yeah.
Because we need still social bonding. We should still feel the culture of the company. And we see it as well when young people join our company. We have so-called organizational health check where we check the culture. For sure, if they go to a company and it's empty rooms, they cannot feel the culture if you just see empty offices. Yeah. So for sure, we should never 100%. It should always be, this is a company, this are your people, this are your colleagues, and this is our culture.
Right. And Thorsten, it is a wonderful explanation when you say, hey, you need to feel the place where you are. Because nobody goes to the office anymore, right? Okay. You have no identity. That's the reason why we go to holidays. On holidays, you don't do a virtual holiday trip, because in a holiday, you feel the hotel, you feel the place, you feel the energy of the place, right? And it's the same in a company, that the people feel, what kind of place do we have here, and what is our home? But then we also have to challenge our companies that the home or the second home is inspiring. If your workplace is boring, I understand if the people say, I stay at home because our workplace is not different than at home. I need to have a lounge, perhaps, a nice coffee bar, an environment. So make sure that it's worse to come to the office.
But this is a hygienic factor.
Yeah.
People leave company not because of the company, but because of their leaders.
Right.
And they make the difference. And if my couch is blue or red, I don't care.
Yeah.
My leader, my colleagues.
That's a good point. It's the person first, and then the environment or the infrastructure second.
People leave companies because of leaders.
But would you agree that the infrastructure is getting more important?
Supporting.
We were very thankful for sharing your thoughts on this complex topic. We've learned that we should not call it new leadership, that good leadership has always been around, and there's always been around bad leadership, and that it's the challenge of new leaders to be good leaders. Thank you very much. Thank you very much to you, listeners and viewers, for your attention. And as always, expect the unexpected.